Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security has an expansive and varied mission. Managing its resources efficiently, effectively, and as one DHS are key to it successfully meeting that mission. How is the Department of Homeland Security turning its one DHS vision into reality? What is DHS doing to better manage its resources and execute its overall mission? How is DHS providing balanced stewardship between meeting mission objectives and investing wisely? We will explore these questions and so much more with our very special guest, Rafael Borras, Undersecretary for Management at the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. Rafael, welcome.
Well, thank you. Good to be here.
Also joining our conversation from IBM is George Kruiser. George, welcome. Rafael, let's start off by learning more about the department. Though our listeners are very familiar with the Department of Homeland Security in the midst of its seventh year, perhaps you can give us a sense of the mission and its continuing evolution.
Well, let's start with the QHSR. I think that's a good place to start because that was a sort of a seminal moment for the department where it was able to finally come to grips with its core mission. For any organization, come to grips with what the core mission is. What do I want to be when I grow up? Getting to that point is important because it's from that basic notion of who are we and what do we want to do? And from that flows your programs, your activities, your mission. So it was very important to get that right. Giving us a framework to be able to operate is the key. And it's the same thing in management. You know, I think it's very important to start with a sort of a conceptual framework. What is it we're trying to achieve? How do we want to do it? What do we expect? What are our outcomes? And how are we going to measure that? And that's what the QHSR and the BRRR give the department, an ability to begin that process. So it's good.
So with an important mission that DHS has, could you give us a sense of operationally, what's the size and scale of its operation? What's the size of its budget, number of FTEs, and the geographical footprint of the department?
We're everywhere. All you have to do is watch the news every day, and we probably dominate half of the news on any given news day. We're roughly 200,000 employees. We have an operating budget of around $43 billion. That's appropriated dollars, and we have a lot of fee-generating activities, which bring us up to about $53, $55 billion. You know, it was very important for the department in order to come together to find that identity. Think about it. You had 22 different components that came together from different agencies, all with their own legacy notion of what they were, who they were, what their mission was, oftentimes connected to completely different mission sets. So if I came from the Department of Transportation or I came from Treasury, had a different context in which I operated my business. And coming into the Department of Homeland Security, where we were the mission of securing the borders, aviation security, safe and resiliency, those are very, very different notions. And weaving that together, creating a fabric, bringing it all that together, really required a different mindset. So, you know, we're only 7.5 years old, really approaching 8 years old. I liken it to, you know, with the raising of a child. You know, if you raise a child without any guidance, without any structure, God help you, by the time that child becomes a teenager, and then you say, you know, put your shoes on before you go outside or comb your hair, they typically say no. And that's what we were trying to get to at this department. We need an identity. We need a structure. We need a way and a platform to be able to do our business.
So with an important mission, a varied mission, and a huge operational footprint, let me talk a little bit about what you do as the Undersecretary for Management for DHS. Could you give us a sense of the role and the responsibilities you have under your purview?
Probably the simplest way to describe it is the Undersecretary for Management is the Chief Management Officer for the agency. So what does that mean? In addition to all of the financial apparatus, the human capital apparatus, so it's the CIO, the CX, all the Chief Financial Officer, the Chief Procurement Officer, all of those administrative authorities report to the Undersecretary of Management. But I really think about my job as being sort of the number one steward for good government. Really, that's what I see my job is, to constantly talk about good business practices, good return on investment. Now, somebody's going to say, what investments in the federal government? Well, we make investments in people. We make investments in goods and services that we acquire. So it's my job to make sure that we're good stewards of those investments, of the taxpayers' money. So I'm always talking about good government. I think that's my job.
Yeah. How do you support, or how do the functional areas that report through you support the overall mission of DHS? And specifically, I think you mentioned the 22 different components that make up this rather large organization.
That's done largely in an integrated fashion. You know, we serve basically two primary functions. We have sort of the headquarters or the departmental level responsibility where we have to be good stewards of the department's overall business. And then we are a service function. We have to serve the component agencies that are meeting the mission of the department. And that oftentimes is the area that gets the least amount of attention. So we often talk about in management, what do we do to comply? And I'm trying to change that conversation. What are we doing to serve? So how are we serving the component agencies? That's very important to me.
As you look at both the compliance and serving the component agencies, you know, it's probably endless opportunities for things to do. When you look out, what were the three most important things that you needed to work on when you came aboard, and how are you working on those three items?
You know, I identified essentially three major areas of attention. I think it's very important coming into an organization to provide some context, a framework for what you're going to be focused on. People want to know that. So I've tried to distill that down to some very simple notions. We're going to concentrate on very strong financial management, and I'll get back to each one of these. We're going to concentrate on good acquisition. And then finally, we're going to concentrate on our people, our human capital. Really, those are the pillars. Those are the foundation that we're going to build our success upon. So for financial management, it's not just, again, complying with what we have to do financially, the requirements we have to report to OMB, to report to Congress. Are we doing the right kind of analysis, the right value-added analysis to help decision-makers make good decisions? Now, when I look at the Department of Homeland Security, like many other federal agencies, one tool that's lacking that clearly in many areas in the private sector, we have these tools, and what I call decision support tools. But do we have the tools that inform decision makers? You know, the department is very large. We have a very varied mission. We execute that mission through hundreds of thousands of employees along with not quite an equal number of contract employees. So there's a lot of people executing the mission. In addition, we work with our state and local partners. So it's a vast array of people that are involved in the mission of DHS. One of the things that's lacking at the Department of Homeland Security, but we're doing something about, is beginning to get a grips with what's the right kind of information we need for decision makers, how are we going to collect that information, how we're going to provide it to decision makers real time so that we can make better, smarter decisions. Now, those tools don't make the decisions for you, but they support decision making. The business of protecting the nation's homeland requires real-time support. So while I am not in the frontline provision of service business providing Homeland Security services, we are providing that backbone support, and I need better tools to be able to do that. So financial management is very, very key to that. You know, with all of these areas, the commonality is what I talk about quite often is getting back to the basics. Do you perform your core mission well? When I speak to young people in the department and outside, I always get the same question from young folks. What can I do to get better? That's a question I'm always asked. What can I do to get better? Implying, what are the shortcuts I can take to get to the top? And I always answer the same way. And it's not just to young people. I say the same thing within the organization. If you want to get better, you've got to get good first. So in that human capital area, when we're talking about how do we train and develop our workforce and getting back to those core skills, is if you're in the financial management area, make sure you're good at what you do. And we need to make sure that we're providing you the tools you need to be able to work effectively and smart. Same thing with acquisition in human capital, in information management, all the areas. So it's a big sort of back to the future movement. I want people to get good at the basics, be good at their core skills. And then we can help them get better.
You know, leadership starts with a leader. So I'll ask you a little bit about what you were good at as you worked through your career in order to get where you are today.
Well, you know, I was very lucky in the beginning of my career. I started working in county government in the budget office. And I can't think of a better place for a young person to begin his or her career in government, any level of government, than as I had the opportunity to start my career in the county's budget office. It was like going into the brain central. It really was like being at the master control. Think of the Wizard of Oz. I got a chance to work behind the curtain and see how government worked. It was a tremendous education for me. And I stayed in local government, did some other things, but I wound up going back to city government in the early 90s when I worked as a deputy city manager in two different cities. I got to tell you, that was really, really important foundationally for the evolution of my skill sets. Being in local government as opposed to the federal government, there's a tremendous sense of urgency. You have to solve problems right away. So if everything works well, you typically don't hear from folks, but that rarely happens. So if the garbage doesn't get picked up, you hear about it. If the schools are not open on time or if the facilities are not working correctly in the summertime, if the pools don't work, there's immediacy to action. That was a great discipline about getting things done. Also, in my case, and like many city governments, you work in the same space as a legislative body. So the city council, and in my case, the city manager's office, the mayor's office, were all located in City Hall. So you have that immediacy of somebody walking into your office and saying, what are we going to do about this problem? As I moved to the federal government in 94, when I went to the Commerce Department, I found that I had to learn a different pace to work. It is challenging in the federal government because you're so far removed, particularly in a role like mine, you're so far removed from the end user that you really need to be self-disciplined about making sure that you keep front and center. What am I here to do? I'm here to serve and instill that into your organization. So all of these lessons, George, were very important in my foundation to help me build up to where I think I am today, not to mention my 10 years in the private sector. Was also very helpful.
I was going to ask you, how did the private sector experience either, help or influence your ability to serve in the public sector capacity?
That 10-year stint in the private sector was instrumental in allowing me to learn how to think about the value proposition of what I do. Very, very important. You know, at the end of the day, when you're in the business of selling professional services, whatever they are. I happen to be in engineering construction industry, but it could apply to any. You have to add value. Otherwise, your client doesn't need you. So it was that need to understand what were the client's needs to be able to fulfill them, and also to learn how to do that efficiently. There was no need to waste resources in the private sector. Everything that you waste is you're losing it from the bottom line. So that bottom line focus was very, very important, a great discipline. There's another commonality that I found in the private sector, along with local government, that we don't quite have in the federal government in most cases. And that's the attention to what I call the revenue side of the equation. In local government, you have to manage to your revenues. You're looking at your property tax revenues. You're looking at other receipts. And you're constantly watching, as I say, both sides of the ledger. Same thing in the private sector, certainly. You're looking at your revenue. You're looking at your cash flow. You're looking at your burn rate. You're looking at all of these things that go into how do we monitor and measure our business and be able to project. Well, in many areas of the federal government and other local, other governmental units, we manage expenses without a lot of thought about either the return on investment on that expenditure or anything to bump up against, as I say, the other side of the ledger. So finding ways to instill that discipline in a largely expense-dominated financial culture is a challenge. And I do that with a lot of it with reporting, looking at information, trying to replicate a business balance sheet, and creating that document, even though it's not a perfect document because we don't do that the same way in the federal government, but creating tools like that to allow people to look and think about the consequences of their action, the cost of certain activity, to think about overhead. It costs something to run programs. We don't often do a good job of stepping back and analyzing what is the cost, what is the right cost structure to support these kinds of activities.
Raphael, it's a great segue into understanding. You've alluded to it a little bit about the need to serve as an element, I would say, of leadership. But I want to get a sense of your definition. What are the characteristics of an effective leader? And who, if anyone, has influenced your leadership style and management approach?
Well, you know, there were so many individuals along the way, wonderful men and women that were mentors, both officially and unofficially, some who I work for and some from afar. And I took away so much from all of them. You know, I'll give you a very simple story. During college, I was working for my father. And my father had a business associate who was in a relatively comparable line of business as my father. And he walked into my father's business one day and he said, I acquired a dozen crates of batteries. And I'm going to sell these batteries. And they're a great deal. And I'm going to make all this extra money off these batteries. And he had this conversation with my father, and he left, and my father said, he's going to wind up eating those batteries. And I had to be about 17 years old at the time. I said, Dad, I don't understand. What do you mean? He says, he's lost sight of what his business was. He just took advantage of this opportunity, took batteries in, and thought he was going to get in the battery business, and I predict he's going to wind up eating these batteries. Well, lo and behold, about a year later, my father got a call. This fellow was going out of business. And because he was in a related business to my father, he said, oh, you might want to come over and take a look at, you know, maybe there's some things that I've got that you can use. So my father asked me to go with him. And we looked at some of the tools, some of the merchandise that was my father didn't have any interest in. He took me into the back and he said, I want you to look at something. What do you see in front of you? And I stood staring at all these boxes and it didn't hit me right away. And my father said, there are all the batteries. Case after case after case of batteries. You know, as simple as that sound, it was such an important lesson that I learned about, A, understanding your core business and staying to your core business. And I use that a lot for myself to make sure that I'm not getting myself into batteries.
What is the One DHS vision and strategy? We will ask Raphael Borras, Undersecretary for Management at the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.